Chapter 30. Later the same afternoon, the Coast Guard cutter Weehawken moved easily over the low, breeze-ruffled waves and slowed as the order came down from the wheelhouse to the engine room to reduce speed. Captain Duane Lewis peered through his binoculars at the big container ship that was approaching from the south less than a nautical mile away. His expression was calm and relaxed, his cap tilted slightly back over a thicket of sandy hair. He lowered the glasses, revealing deep-set, ivory-brown eyes. He turned and smiled thinly at the woman standing beside him on the bridge wing, who was dressed in the uniform of the United States Coast Guard.
"There's your ship," he said in a bass voice, "sailing as smugly as a wolf in sheep's clothing. She looks innocent enough."
Julia Lee gazed over the railing at the Sung Lean Star.
"A deception. God only knows the human suffering that's being endured hidden within her hull."
She wore no makeup, and a fake scar ran across her chin. Her beautiful long black hair had been cropped short and styled like a man's, and was covered by a ship's baseball cap. In the beginning, she had second thoughts about clandestinely switching roles with Lin Wan Chu, but her burning hatred of Chin Chang, along with an unyielding confidence that she could succeed, made her more determined than ever to make the attempt. She felt a surge of optimism at knowing that she was not alone in this mission. Lewis turned and aimed the binoculars toward the flat green shoreline and the mouth of the lower Atchafalaya River, only 3 miles away. Except for a few shrimp boats, the water was empty. He gestured at a young officer standing at his side.
"Lieutenant Stowe, signal her to come to a stop and stand by for a boarding inspection."
"Aye, sir," acknowledged Stowe, as he stepped into the radio room. Tanned, blonde, and tall, Jefferson Stowe had the boyish good looks of a tennis instructor. The Weehawken heeled slightly in response to her rudder as the helmsman brought the cutter around on a parallel course with the container ship that was flying the flag of the People's Republic of China. The decks were piled high with containers, and yet she rode strangely high in the water, Lewis observed.
"Did they reply?" he asked, loud enough to be heard across the wheelhouse.
"They answered in Chinese," Stowe called from the radio room.
"Shall I translate?" offered Julia.
"It's a dodge," Lewis said with a grin. "Half the foreign ships we stop have a habit of acting dumb. Most of their officers speak better English than we do."
Lewis waited patiently as the 76mm Mark 75 remote-controlled rapid-firing gun on the bow turned and ominously aimed its muzzle at the container ship.
"Please inform the captain, in English, to stop engines or I will fire into his bridge."
Stowe returned to the bridge wing with a smile stretched across his lips.
"The captain answered in English," he said. "He reports he is stopping."
As if to underscore the compliance, the foam that spilled from around the bows fell away as the big container ship slowly drifted to a stop. Lewis looked at Julia with care written in his eyes.
"Ready, Miss Lee?"
She nodded.
"Ready as I'll ever be."
"You've checked your radio?"
It was a statement rather than a question. Julia glanced down at where the miniature radio was taped inside the cleavage of her breasts under her bra.
"Working perfectly."
Without being obvious, she pressed her legs together, feeling the little 25-caliber automatic that was strapped to the inside of her right thigh. A short Smith & Wesson first response knife, whose blade could spring open in an eye blink and was strong enough to rip through sheet metal, was taped to her biceps under the sleeve of her uniform.
"Keep your transmitter on so we can monitor your every word," said Lewis. "The Weehawken will remain within range of your radio until the Sung Lean Star docks at Soongari, and you signal that you are ready to be picked up. Hopefully the substitution will go as planned. But should you encounter a problem after you take the cook's identity, call out and we'll come running. I'll also have our helicopter and crew in the air ready to drop on board."
"I appreciate your concern, Captain."
Julia paused, turned slightly, and motioned to a burly man with a walrus mustache
whose deep-set gray eyes peered from under the brim of a baseball cap.
Chief Cochran has been a dream to work with during our rehearsals for the switch.
Chief Mickey Cochran has been called many names, said Lewis, laughing, but never a dream.
I'm sorry for putting everyone to so much trouble, Julia said softly.
All on board the Weehawken feel responsible for your safety. Admiral Ferguson gave me strict orders to protect you regardless of the consequences. I don't envy you your job, Miss Lee, but I promise we will do everything in our power to keep you out of harm's way. She looked away, her face very controlled, despite the tears forming in her eyes.
Thank you, she said simply. Thank them all for me.
As Stowe gave the order to swing out the cutter's launch, Captain Lewis looked down at Julia and said, It's time. Then he firmly shook her hand. God bless and best of luck. Captain Lee Hung Chang of the Sung Lin Star was not unduly annoyed at being stopped by the American Coast Guard and boarded. He had expected it long before now. He had been warned by Chin Chang maritime directors that the United States' immigration agents were stepping up their efforts to halt the rise in illegal alien smuggling. He felt impervious to any threat. The most diligent inspection would never discover the second hull attached beneath the bilges and keel of his ship that housed 300 immigrants. Despite the cramped and insufferable conditions, he had not lost one. Hung Chang was assured that a generous Chin Chang would reward him with a fat bonus after his return to China, as in the past. This was his sixth voyage, combining the legal transportation of cargo with smuggling, and already his compensation had built a fine house for his family in the upper-class section of Beijing. He watched the bow wave fall off the Coast Guard cutter, his expression calm and outwardly relaxed. Hung Chang was still in his late 40s, yet his hair was a gleaming salt and pepper under the sun, though his narrow mustache was still black. He stared through kindly grandfather, dark amber eyes, his lips tight with silence as the two ships drifted closer. Then a boat was lowered and began to motor toward the Sung Lin Star. He nodded to his first officer. "Go to the boarding ladder and greet our guests. About 10 by the look of it. Give them your fullest cooperation and allow them free access throughout the ship." Then, as calm and relaxed as if he was sitting in the garden of his home, Captain Lee Hung Chang ordered a cup of tea from the galley and watched the Weehawken's boarding party climb onto the deck of his ship and begin their inspection. Lieutenant Stowe paid his respects to Captain Hung Chang on the bridge and requested to see the ship's papers and manifest. The crew from the Coast Guard cutter began to split up, four searching the ship's compartments, three examining the cargo containers, and another three who headed for the crew's quarters. The Chinese acted indifferently to the intrusion and paid little attention to the three Coast Guardsmen who seemed more interested in the ship's mess, particularly the galley, instead of their individual cabins. Only two of the Sung Lin Star's crew were present in the mess room. Both were dressed in the white uniform and hats of galley workers. They sat around a table, one reading a Chinese newspaper, while the other spooned a bowl of soup. Neither protested when Chief Cochran, using sign language, asked them to step into the passageway while a search of the dining area was conducted. Disguised as one of the Coast Guard boarding crew, Julia walked directly into the galley, where she found Lin Wan Chu dressed in white shirt and pants leaning over a stove, a long wooden spoon in one hand, stirring a large copper vat of boiling shrimp. Under her captain's orders to cooperate with the Coast Guard inspectors, she looked up from the steam rising from the vat and flashed a toothy, friendly smile. She went on working, unconcerned, as Julia walked behind her, eyes routinely darting into pantries and storerooms. Lin Wan Chu did not sense the needle of the syringe enter the flesh of her back. After a few seconds, her eyes took on a puzzled look as the steam over the vat suddenly seemed to thicken into a dense cloud. Then a solid blackness swept over her. Much later, when she awoke on board the Weehawken, her first thought was whether she had overboiled the shrimp. In less than a minute and a half, and thanks to the results of well-practiced exercise, Julia was dressed in the cook's white kitchen clothes, while Lin Wan Chu lay on the deck in the uniform of the U.S. Coast Guard. Another 30 seconds passed as Julia cut short the cook's hair before pulling a baseball cap with the Coast Guard insignia and the word Weehawken down over Lin Wan Chu's head.
"Take her away," Julia said to Cochrane, who was patiently guarding the doorway to the passage outside.
Cochrane and the other members of his boarding party quickly picked up the Chinese cook, one on each side, and hung her arms over their shoulders so her head would sag on her chest and make identification difficult. The baseball cap was pulled down over her face before he gave Julia a final nod and said softly, so only she could hear, "I wish you a great performance." Then they half-dragged, half-carried Lin Wan Chu back to the boarding launch. Julia picked up the wooden spoon and continued stirring the boiling shrimp as if she'd been at it all afternoon.
"One of your men seems to have injured himself," said Captain Hung Chang at seeing the boarding party lower a limp body into the launch.
"The fool didn't watch where he was going and cracked his head on an overhead pipe," Stowe explained. "Probably has a concussion."
"Have you found anything interesting aboard my ship?" asked Hung Chang.
"No, sir, your ship is clean."
"Always happy to oblige the American authorities," said Hung Chang condescendingly.
"Your destination is Sungari?"
"According to my sailing orders and the documents provided by Chin Shang Maritime."
"You may get underway as soon as we're clear," said Stowe, giving the Chinese captain a courtesy salute. "I regret that we had to detain you."
20 minutes after the Coast Guard launch had pulled away, the pilot boat arrived from Morgan City and swung alongside the Sung Lin Star. The pilot climbed aboard and made his way up to the bridge. Soon the container ship was moving through the deep water channel of the lower Atchafalaya River and across Sweet Bay Lake toward the docks of Sungari. Captain Hung Chang stood on the bridge wing beside the Cajun pilot as he took the automated helm and expertly guided the ship through the marshlands. Out of curiosity, Hung Chang peered through a pair of binoculars at the turquoise ship anchored just out of the channel. Bold letters across the hull designated the vessel as a research ship belonging to the National Underwater and Marine Agency. Hung Chang had often seen them on scientific marine expeditions during his voyages around the world. He idly wondered what manner of experiments they were conducting here on the Atchafalaya River below Sungari. As he panned the glasses along the deck of the research ship, he suddenly stopped and found himself peering at a tall man with thick, curly black hair, who was staring back through his own binoculars. What struck Li Hung Chang odd was that the crewman on the research vessel wasn't focused on the container ship itself. He seemed to be studying the wake directly behind the stern.